As you know, yesterday was New Year's Day, the 1st of Abib. And Satan has so corrupted mankind and so altered things that anything that God has ordained, Satan has tried to change it. But of course, God's method goes on, and the year starts, and you know, when you walk out in the gardens and in the fields, you can see the new shoots coming out. And whether mankind starts the year in the 1st of January in the middle of winter or not, the fact is, God's creation is keeping time with his calendar. So the new year starts in spring. And last year has been a pretty bad year for most folks. And I was talking to the janitor before I came in, and he was saying, he says, I hope this coming spring and summer is going to be better than last year. I said, yes, it was a very bad year weather-wise too. And he had been across to Canada, and he said he'd seen the Canadian Niagara Falls, and he said, when I read in the papers that the Niagara Falls had frozen over, he said, I was absolutely amazed. And I said, yes, that's right, I heard some news about that too. And said, the whole river had gone solid, and the falls were just hanging like there, like concrete. It's all thawing now, and probably caused floods, because it should be flowing away all the winter. But now it's frozen up, and it'll just all fall. So the weather around the world, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, floods, freezing conditions, boiling conditions and others, was a bad time last year. But we know that no matter how bad things get, we are getting closer and closer to the Savior's return. Now this story which David read about Balaam, I want to take some lessons from it, because they still apply to us. Baal, his name is mentioned in the Bible many, many times. You'll find Baal worship mentioned. Just to recap on some of the things which we have mentioned before, Baal worship had its origin in the belief that every plot of ground owed its productivity to a supernatural being called Baal. Baal. The word means the master or the lord or the possessor or the husband. So every bit of ground had a Baal, who that was his property. And together the plural of Baal is Baalim. Now we're going to speak of Balaam the prophet, but Baalim, B-A-A-L-I-M, is plural for Baal. And in ancient civilizations, and even in India, they all used to worship the Baal of that plot of ground so that they would get a good crop. And fertility of soil, or fertility of the womb, or fertility of the vineyard, or the trees, or whatever, all depended on this Baal, this husband, or this lord. And God tried to impress upon the people of Israel that the prosperity and the harvest, whether it's of the field or of the tree or of the womb, depended on him. But paganism is that the prosperity of the earth depends on these Baals. And so there's this contention. All the way through scripture, you'll see Israel sort of springing between pagan rites of fertility and the worship of God, the true husband of the church or of his people. Many good kings tried to put out Baal worship. They slaughtered the priests of Baal. They burnt down the temples of Baal. But Baal worship kept coming back. In fact, Jezebel, who's the priestess of Baal, was the wife of King Ahab, and she reintroduced Baal worship in Israel. And these fertility rites, which were part of heathen worship, not only involved sacrificing to the Baal or the lord of that plot of ground, but they used to have sexual encounters with the priests of Baal. So very, very often when the women who, say, wanted children and they were barren or thought they were barren, maybe the husband was barren, when they would come, the priests would sleep with the women. And when they got a child, they think, Baal, God is answered. And this was in direct opposition to the teachings of God. The festival will be coming up too soon, which is Passover, God's festival, where he died for our sins, has a counterfeit Ashtaroth's festival, Ishtar. Now Ashtaroth was the wife or the goddess of fertility. Right? So at the time of Easter, long before the Christian era, going thousands of years before Jesus died on the cross, they had the festival of Ashtaroth, where they worshipped the goddess Ashtaroth and her husband Baal. And since fertility was the main object, they worshipped the egg. It's a symbol of fertility. And that's why we have Easter eggs in the shops right now, because it's the symbol of fertility. They believed that an egg fell from heaven, landed on the river Euphrates, and out came the queen of heaven, Ashtaroth. Now the egg is a symbol of fertility all over the world. And even though Britain is not outright Baal worship, the fact is, Baal worship is still here. Another symbol of fertility is the bunny rabbit. Alright? And that's only because it's so prolific. If you have two rabbits in a cage and feed them and give them water and so on, in a few years you'll have hundreds of rabbits. Because within months the young are breeding. It's like rats. They too are tremendously fertile. Alright, so when we're coming up to the fertility festival of Ishtar, remember it is Satan's counterfeit of the Passover. And then people say, oh, why don't you keep Easter? So we don't keep Easter because it's the festival of Baal. It's a fertility festival. And their pagan Messiah was conceived at the festival of Ishtar and was born 9 months later in the festival of Saturnalia, which is Christmas. You probably heard a lot in the newspapers and on the wireless of the people who want to make sure that their child is born in the year 2000. Have you heard that? I don't know whether you've heard that, right? It's big news now. They're telling you about the right time to get together if you want a baby to be born in the year 2000. Each country has a different date, mind you. But that's what Christmas is. It's the output or the child that was conceived at Easter. And he's the Son God. So we are in a world now where very few Christians know the significance of the festivals they're keeping. Very few Christians know that. And when I first found out, when somebody gave me a book in the Adventist church, the elder gave it to me, and I read it, and I said, wow, have you read this book? I said, we are riddled with paganism. Riddled. Oh, he says, don't worry about that, dear. I said, listen, I haven't started keeping the seventh day Sabbath, much to the annoyance of my own family. I said, to stop here. I said, this, we've just got to stop having these Easter eggs, and we've got to stop. I wouldn't even eat an Easter egg, even though I love chocolate. And it can't have these trees. I said, because that's all Baal worship, and God detests Baal worship. Now when we come to the prophet Balaam, Balaam, okay, spelled slightly different. He was a prophet of God. When he first started, God gave him a gift. And when God gives a gift, he doesn't sort of take it back after a little while. People might misuse the gift, but God does not take it back. It's like if God gave you a good voice or a good talent for music or a very clever brain or something, and you used it in the arena of making money or sin, God would not just say, "Oh, why, you're misusing your good looks, or you're misusing your talent of speech, or you're misusing your brain. I'm going to take it all back." No, he just leaves you with your good gift till you die. Well, Balaam, the prophet, was one of these prophets who misused his gift. And the thing he did, when he realized that he could foretell certain things, that he could see certain things, he thought, "Wow, God's given me this great gift." He began to charge people for it. And when they came to him and said, will you tell us what we should do in this matter? And Balaam would say, "Well, I'll consult God." And God would say, "This is the proper way." And Balaam would think, "Wow, what happened? Exactly as I told them." He then began to say, "Well, yes, I'll do it, but it'll cost you so much." And he began to charge. He became a mercenary prophet. He turned religion into a money-making racket. That's what Balaam did. And the story which David read, and which we will talk of for a little while, is the story of commercialization and money making in the church. The Christian church, sad to say, has become an enormous money making machine. And millions of people are in the business of making money, and they wouldn't even become ministers if it wasn't the wage or the house or the manse or the telephone or the car. That's the first consideration. Whereas Jesus Christ told us, "Freely you have received, freely give." You cannot set a price on anything God has given us free. All the knowledge and all the understanding, cannot set a price on it at all. But this is what Balaam started. Now, when he was called by Balak, king of Moab, they offered him some money. And at first he said, no, I can't. They said, "We want you to come from far distance." You know, some say it was Mesopotamia out there in Iraq. He traveled a long way. He said, "No, I can't do it." But they said, "Listen, we'll give you a lot of money." He thought it over. His heart was wanting to go for the cash. His mind was telling him, "It's wrong. I can't go and curse these people because I heard that they are blessed. I can't do this." So the messengers came back and told Balak, the king, they said, "He's not coming." And they said, "Send some more. Send better messengers. Send more money. He'll come. We can buy him. Just double the money." There was a Christian missionary who went to China. He was a managing director of a big American company. And when he left, they noticed that the company was beginning to go downhill. And they thought, "Our problems are not just the market. Our problems is we've lost this fellow. He's gone off to China to become a missionary." And they said, "You better get him back, because if he doesn't come back, we are lost. We don't know what to do." So they sent a delegation to this missionary, and they said, we'll double your wages. Just come back. The firm is in a dead trouble." And he said, "No, I don't want to." "No," he said, "I'm not coming back." They said, "Listen, we'll give you four times your wages." He said, "What's wrong with that? I mean, we're giving you four times what you earned before. We need you in a bad way." And he said, "Listen, it's not the wages I'm worried about. The wages are big, but the job is small. And I don't want to throw up this little job for that tiny, insignificant, unimportant job, no matter how big the money was." The job he was doing really was just looking after a few children in an orphanage in China. And they couldn't understand that when he, this great American businessman, looked at the job he was doing in China, he thought that the job he was doing for God was infinitely greater than the job they were offering him and the money they were offering him. But Balaam wasn't like that. The minute they stepped up the cash, he thought, I'm on my way. Now if you look at our Bibles, at Numbers chapter 22 and 23 and 24, we'll just get a few lessons from here. All right, the first lesson. Balak sent yet again, verse 15, princes more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said to him, thus saith Balak, son of Zippor, let nothing, I pray thee, hinder thee from coming unto me, for I will promote thee unto very great honor, and I will do whatsoever thou sayest unto me. Come therefore, I pray thee, curse me this people. Anything you want, I'll give you. Just come and curse them. Balaam's answer is worth noting because it's still true. And Balaam answered and said unto the servants of Balak, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more. He said, it's not what you give me. You could give me 10 times. I cannot go beyond his word. And God came to Balak. Oh, I missed a verse. Now therefore, I pray you, tarry ye also here this night, that I may know what the Lord will say unto me more. His heart was really wanting to go. He knew he couldn't do anything against God's people, but the urge was too great. I'd love to go. I mean, there's so much they're offering me. And he said, you wait, I'll just go and ask God. And God could size him up. God knew exactly what he was thinking and how he's got itching feet to go there. And God came to Balak at night and said unto him, if the men come to call thee, rise up and go with them. But yet the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do. He said, if they come back, go with them. Because I know you want to go. And Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his ass and went with the princes of Moab. And God's anger was kindled because he went. The only way you could understand this is that phrase when God said, if they come, go! It's an exasperated way he said it. If you want to go, go! I'm not giving you my blessing, but if that's what you want, get on and do it. And when he said, yes, I'll go, God was so angry because he couldn't get it into his thick head that God didn't really want him to go. So he went. And you know the story? As it was read, the angel tried to stop him, angel of the Lord, because the angel knew full well, this guy is going to his death. And even though God was annoyed, he let him do what he wanted to. He wouldn't let him curse Israel. But if he wanted to go and just get rich, thinking he's going to do well and kill himself in the bargain, well, get on with it. And God and the angel of the Lord tried to stop him as to say, listen, don't be stupid. God is annoyed with you. And he couldn't see the angel. But the ass could see. It's like sometimes animals could see and hear things that we can't. You get that very, very often. Dogs and cats can see things, you know, even in the dark, which we can't see. They could hear sounds. Owls can hear sounds and bats can hear sounds which we can't pick up on the wavelength we are working at. So this ass saw the angel and it tried to avoid it, ran into the field, and Balaam was belting it. And then the angel went and stood in a narrow place, and the ass didn't know what to do. It didn't want to go because it was frightened. And Balaam couldn't see the angel, and he flogging this poor thing, and scraped against the wall and hurt his leg, and he was so annoyed. And then the angel went and stood in a very narrow place, and the ass couldn't go forward. There was no way around. There was no way back. He was being whacked by this Balaam. So he just sat down. Didn't know what to do, the poor creature. God opened the mouth of the ass. It's like Satan spoke through the serpent. And he's so incensed, he's so mad, he can't even reason that a donkey's talking to him. He said, if I had a sword, I would kill you. And the ass is answering him. God's using this ass like a ventriloquist is using a dummy. When you see these fellows, they're just looking at you, you know, and got this dummy in their hands, and lo and behold, it's speaking. Obviously, it's not the dummy speaking. It's God speaking through it, but it looked exactly as though the ass was speaking. And then God opened his eyes, saw the angel. And the angel said, I can do you in. Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, verse 31 of chapter 22, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, his sword drawn in his hand, and he bowed down his face, his head, and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me. In other words, I tried to stop you, because your way is wrong. The ass had more sense than you had. But he still wanted to go. He didn't turn around and said, well, okay, I'm very sorry about that. I'm turned around, I've learned my lesson, I'm going home. In his heart, he still wanted the money. And the angel said, get on with it, go on, go ahead. And when he arrived, Balak heard that he had come, very pleased. Balak said unto Balak, this is verse 38, lo, I am come unto thee. Have I now any power at all to say anything? The word that God putteth in my mouth, that shall I speak. He knows full well. I can't say anything. I've just got to say what God is going to speak through me. But I'll have the money. I'll take the money anyway. But he's trying to play both ways. He's trying to do, he couldn't go against God, but at the same time he wanted the money. And he knew about sacrifices, and he knew the importance of seven. And he said, all right, get seven bulls, seven rams, and we'll sacrifice it seven times. A bull and a ram, a bull and a goat, this way. Seven altars, prepare here, seven oxen, and seven rams. That's chapter 23. Balak the king did everything. He had the altars built, a bull and a ram, another one. And then, he said, they're all standing by a whole collection. There's Israel in the valley, all the tents. Go ahead now, curse them. And Balak heard that Balaam was come. He went out to meet him in the city of Moab. No, go back over here. And Balaam said unto Balak, stand by thy burnt offering, and I will go, peradventure the Lord will come to meet me, and whatsoever he showeth me, I will tell thee. And he went to a high place, and God met Balaam. Verse 4 of chapter 23. God met Balaam, and he said unto him, I have prepared, this is Balaam talking, I have prepared 7 altars, and I have offered upon every altar a burnt offering and a ram, a bullock and a ram. And the Lord put a word into Balaam's mouth, and said, return unto Balak, and thus shalt thou speak. And he returned unto him, and lo, he stood by his burnt sacrifice, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up this parable and said, couldn't control himself. Even though his heart was after the money, there was nothing, his mouth was taken over by God. And this is what he said. He took up this parable and said, Balak, king of Moab, has brought me from Aram, way at the Euphrates, out of the mountains of the east, saying, come, curse me, Jacob, and come, defy Israel. Now, verse 8. How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? And how shall I defy whom the Lord hath not defied? How can I do it? I just can't do it. There's nothing I can do about it. From the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, a people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations. Oh, they're not reckoned. They're small among the nations. They dwell alone, separate. Who can count the dust of Jacob and number the fourth, a quarter of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his. Here these princes of Moab were absolutely wild. They had sent hundreds of miles from this fellow. Balak said to Balaam, what hast thou done unto me? I took thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast blessed them altogether. Balak and Balaam answered, must I not take heed to speak that which the Lord hath put into my mouth? Balak said unto him, come, I pray thee, with me to another place. As though the place makes any difference. As though the time makes any difference. As though 2,000 or 3,000 years make any difference. As though the money made any difference. Whether he were to give him $1,000,000 or pounds or rupees, it would make no scrap of difference. But anyway, Balaam trotted off to another place. He brought him to Zophar, to the top of Pisgah, and beheld, built 7 altars, and offered a bullock and a ram on every altar. And he said, Balak, and he said unto Balak, that's Balaam speaking, stand here by the burnt offering while I meet the Lord yonder. And the Lord met Balaam, and put a word in his mouth, and said, go again to Balak, and say thus. And when he came to him, behold, he stood by the burnt offering. Just imagine the scene. He said, wait a minute here, I've got to go and speak to God over there. So they're all waiting, and they watched him. And this fellow would see visions with his eyes open. He would look into heaven. He would see things and hear things that we can't see. Right? And they watched him. And he comes back, and when he came, behold, he stood by his burnt offering, and the princes of Moab with him. And Balak said unto him, what hath the Lord spoken? And he took up this parable and said, rise up, Balak, and hear, hearken unto me, thou son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? Behold, I have received commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I can't reverse it. You've got to try and picture how this fellow felt.
He wanted above all things to take the money and curse Israel. But there was nothing he could do about it. He said, listen, I can't oppose him. If he puts blessing in my mouth, I can't do anything about it. Get that straight. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among him. God has brought him out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. Surely there is no enchantment against Jacob, neither is there any divination against Israel. According to this time, it shall be said of Jacob and Israel, what God had wrought. There's nothing you can do about it. The story goes on. Verse 27, Balak said, I'll bring you to another place. And so it goes on. Chapter 24, verse 13. If Balak would give me his whole house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the commandment of the Lord to do either good or bad of mine own mind. What the Lord saith, that will I speak. And so it went. And then he stayed in the land of Moab. He didn't go home. And he said, listen, there's one way to conquer this folk. If you want to curse them, get them to sit. And that's what he taught him. It says here in the Bible, his advice in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15, talking about certain sinners which had forsaken the right way and are gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. In Jude chapter 1, verse 11, woe unto them, for they have gone into the way of Cain, run greedily after the error of Balaam for reward. Perished in the gainsaying of Korah. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 14, talking about the sins of a certain church, I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. He says, you cannot curse Israel. I cannot curse Israel. There's nothing we can do against this nation. But if you get them to sin, if you involve them in your sacrificial feasts, if you bring in them into the festivals of fertility, if you get them to commit fornication on a big way, if you let them drop their morals and carry on like the Moabites, he'll curse them. And that's what you want, don't you? And that's what he did. And that's what Balak did. He got the Israelites to sin. And they were like everybody else. And God punished Israel, slaughtered tens of thousands of them. But after 40 years in the wilderness, when they were just entering the promised land, God said, go. Moses, through Moses, he told the high priest, his son, Phinehas, go and conquer Moab, wipe them out. And kill Balaam, the prophet.